Our governor calls Utah the startup capital of the world. And it tracks. We've got a fast-growing, well-educated population and a buzzing economy. And just last week, Utah unveiled the Startup State Initiative, a resource portal for entrepreneurs. From step-by-step guides to a business plan generator, startup.utah.gov is now the first stop for starting or growing a business here. That's startup.utah.gov. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. Last week, Governor Spencer Cox was in Vancouver giving a TED Talk about his Disagree Better initiative, something he launched when he became chair of the National Governors Association. Now, Disagree Better is getting a lot of national attention because, duh, we all want to feel less polarized. But what do we gain from embracing conflict? And what's missing from the Disagree Better campaign right now? It's Monday, April 22nd. I'm Ali Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Dr. Maria Blevins, you have a PhD in communications, and one of your areas of study is conflict. Now, our governor, Spencer Cox, is asking Utahns to start disagreeing better. How do we know when we're disagreeing poorly in the first place?
Oh, such a great question. For me, I feel like I know when I'm disagreeing poorly because I just have a stomach ache about it. I can usually feel it in my body when I have not expressed myself in the way that I want to or treated people with the respect and love and dignity that I hope to. I think we just feel it.
I mean, the thing that I can't kind of personally decide about the Disagree Better initiative is if it's asking us to embrace conflict or avoid it. But I want to ask you, because this is your expertise, like, what is the value in conflict when we do it right?
I feel like when we are experiencing some tension, when we're feeling that conflict. So conflict starts internally, right? We have something that's bugging us. We have that friend that we love who maybe always shows up late with the plans that we make.
Oh, that's me.
Oh, I mean, I'm not calling anyone out, but it's a really good example. I think we all have that person in our lives. So, you know, the first time or two or three or 10, you don't really mind it, but it starts sort of wearing on you. That's internalized conflict. There is like a moment of activation where that internal conflict becomes external conflict. And what I would say is that when we have those conflicts become external, it is our opportunity to build intimacy, to express our needs, to be able to tell the people in our lives, hey, this is what I need to feel valued and respected and loved by you. And I care about you a lot. So I want you to know that I have that need. So I feel, I actually invented a word for this. I feel like conflict is an obstacle-tunity. It doesn't feel that great, but it is this chance to make a relationship, a workplace, a political situation better. Because we can express these things that are inside of us that are now on the outside of us.
Is there room or a need to disagree better or engage in conflict about everything? Like, where do we draw the line? Because I got to tell you, Dr. Blevins, I feel tightness in my chest basically all day. Like, I think I'm born in a state of rage every morning.
Right. I would say, like everything, we have to choose where we put our energy. But I think the things that matter to us, the things that are most important, that friendship that you value, but they're late and that frustrates you, that romantic partner who maybe has trouble finding the hamper to put their dirty clothes at the end of the day, that policy that you feel, you know, doesn't uphold the values that you think are fit for all humans, we could go through the day being mad about all of it. I think we have to sort of like make a priority list, right? And that's a really good point. I feel like we all know those people where like something is always wrong. I think if we really choose the things that are most important to us, that are going to like change our life the most, we're probably going to be listened to the most. Does that make any sense?
I mean, it sounds like pick your battles.
Pick your battles, exactly. We only have a finite amount of energy.
Yeah.
And there should be some joy involved in life, right? And there should be some joy involved in conflict. Again, it's this chance. Conflict happens because there's this chance for a better thing, a better relationship, a better policy.
Yeah. I think a lot from the political perspective about this idea that, like, you only fight with someone or you only, like, kind of go toe-to-toe over something if you really care about it and if you really think it's capable of changing. Like, you only make that investment if you think that it's worth it. And so sometimes I feel like engaging in conflict in and of itself is respectful. Is that crazy?
No, I think that's totally right. When you respectfully engage in conflict, you are telling the other person, hey, I disagree with you, but I think together we could maybe come up with a solution that's great. It's you respecting that other side enough, that other person enough to express what you envision as like a best case scenario. Now, their vision might not be the same, but I think this is what the governor's program is getting at, is that we make our best decisions with our most points of view. I really hate this fact of life, but I'm not always right. And I don't always have the clearest picture of things. And so usually when I've made my best decisions in life, it's when I get a diversity of opinions. And I think right now what's happening is we're at a standstill where like those important dialogues, those important points of view aren't being collaborated with.
You've spent some time kind of looking at the Governor's Disagree Better initiative website. It's, in theory, kind of a resource toolkit that's being handed down to Utahns that we're supposed to make the most of. What are some things you notice rousing?
Yeah. So, I mean, in general, I am like, this is awesome. I love the little videos that display friendship and camaraderie and collaborative relationships between two people that would appear to be on opposite political sides. I think that that's a good role model. I think there's some really great articles when you get into sort of the resources that they offer on how governance is difficult, how decisions are made with more diverse thought, and some really great stuff on identity and narrative. And the main thing is just being curious, right? If we just approach people with curiosity instead of this idea of I'm right, you're wrong. So those are things that I really thought were great about the website.
Is there anything that you think could use more consideration?
Yeah, I think there's sort of two parts that I would want more about. The first is that I think having a better set of communication and conflict skills is like something that will serve every human being. But I worry that this approach takes the responsibility from us as a society and puts it on the individual, right? We're not making good policy because you as individuals are not doing conflict very well. And I think we need to have some bigger conversations about how are we holding our media accountable? How are people in parties holding other people in their party accountable when they are engaging in conflict in a deconstructive manner? So I would say that would be the first thing. And then the second is we are not taught conflict management skills. So, you know, I think we need some more individualized, okay, I'm feeling this feeling inside of me that I'm upset. How can I start a conversation? How can I begin a conflict in a way that's going to be productive and save this relationship, maybe make this relationship stronger?
What is the answer to that? Like, how do we create an environment for healthy conflict? Because it's interesting to hear you talk about the, like, responsibility being on the individual and not the system. It feels really parallel to me to, like, our environmental crisis when Amazon is like, do you want to make your carbon footprint smaller? And I'm like, do you?
Yeah, but, I mean, that was, I think you're exactly right about that.
Yeah, but yeah. Like, I imagine that the sort of approach is also maybe similar when we think about systems or individuals. So where do we start with creating that environment for good conflict?
I think it starts with some of the basics. And in, you know, the first conflict class that you take as an undergraduate student, if you sign up to take a conflict class at UVU with me, we would teach you about creating supportive or defensive climates. And these are communicative tools that will sound really familiar to you. But if you are creating a supportive climate, you're going to be using descriptive vocabulary. And descriptive vocabulary would be, hey, Allie, you have a yellow shirt on today. Instead of using evaluative communication, which is, hey, Allie, you have an ugly yellow shirt on today, right? I am making a decision about what that looks like. And so that's the difference between descriptive and evaluative vocabularies. Problem solving versus controlling. So problem solving is, Allie, you and I want to grab dinner tonight. You know, what are three restaurants you'd like to go to? And I'll give three restaurants and then we'll make a decision. As opposed to, hey, let's have dinner tonight. And then you make a suggestion. And no matter what, I'm going to want whatever I want, right? That's the controlling where, like, it seems like there's a chance for dialogue, but really we know it's going to be Maria's way or no way.
Yeah.
Empathy versus neutrality, right? Am I thinking about you as a human being with complex needs and values? Or am I just sort of like, okay, right? Neutrality we think of as good, but like, we really want to be thinking of humans as whole humans. The last, this is going to feel very, I think, familiar, especially in political conversations. I know at my Thanksgiving dinner it comes up. But do you speak in provisional statements or do you speak with certainty? So provisional statements are, you know, from where I stand, I observe the world in this way. And certainty is the world is this way. So are we speaking like we know everything, or are we leaving some openness for experiences that might not be our own? And the last is speaking from a place of equity versus superiority, right? So equity is you are a human being and you have a point of view and I should listen to it. And superiority is, well, I'm smarter than you. I'm more successful than you. I'm fill in the adjective, right? But that's the reason why my voice matters more than yours. And as I look at, you know, today's almost every system that I operate in, I don't know that people understand how the way that they're speaking can create a really defensive climate. And I'm going to say that with certainty.
Mother's Day is on the horizon, and the good news is that you can find everything you need at Harmon's. Whether it's a little something to brighten mom's day or a memorable spread, here are a few ideas. For breakfast, try Harmon's house-baked cinnamon rolls with freshly squeezed orange juice and a package of fresh-cut strawberries. If you're spicing it up with Bloody Marys, don't forget that Harmon's has an olive bar with over 12 different varieties. Now, flowers are the perennial favorite, and you can order online or pop by the store last minute, shop succulents, potted plants, and elaborate arrangements. May's flower of the month is the hydrangea, very appropriate. Hydrangeas are fragrant and elegant. And if sweets are in order, Harmon's has added raspberry to their selection of brownie flavors. Find all mom's favorites at your local Harmon's or order online at harmonsgrocery.com. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a 6-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. Are there examples you've seen that might be familiar for all of us who live in Salt Lake of this play out, like, poorly or well related to, I don't know, like, public comment about something or a decision-making process?
You know, the first one that comes to my mind is the not in my backyard, right? NIMBY ideas.
Oh,
so I've maybe
density
lived in
conflict. I'm
density
rubbing
conflict.
My hands together.
Right? I've lived in a neighborhood for X number of years, and I can speak with certainty that this is the tone of this neighborhood. This is the feel of this neighborhood. Instead of provisional, like, hey, it could be sort of interesting if a condo was built, I think we often approach density with, like, controlling ideas instead of problem solving. So I think that would be one issue where I've seen some defensive climates created. And again, the person, you know, might be right, but I think if we speak with certainty, we're shutting down any sort of dialogue.
I mean, Utah, every state thinks it's unique, but I do feel like we have some very particular mannerisms in Utah. There's this approach that's often taught that upholds niceness above all else. And I think niceness and kindness are different, but in my mind, it's like, just be nice, maybe be passive aggressive, avoid. Feels like it's kind of our cultural teaching. And you teach this conflict class at UVU, and I feel like your students probably look a lot like, and are, like the future leaders of our state, maybe our future legislators. What lessons have you learned teaching conflict?
So I spend a lot of the beginning of the conflict class just going over, how does even the word conflict make you feel in your body? Are you charging towards it excitedly, or are you apprehensive? And I have folks do a lot of thinking. I have them create metaphors. How do you describe conflict? And so often the metaphors are, you know, conflict is a battle. Conflict is a war. And conflict is turbulence on a plane. Instead of, you know, conflict again being an opportunity or something like that. I also have a lot of students reflect that they have been taught that conflict is not good. It should be avoided at all costs. And that if you are engaging in conflict, you're maybe a troublemaker, or you are someone that is, like, you know, cruising for a bruising.
Yeah.
And because
your whole
of that,
life,
right,
will be ruined.
When
yeah.
That's right. When you're taught to only avoid, you don't build the skills necessary to engage in productive conflict. And I think it's really interesting. It's definitely a Utah characteristic. I would say that it is probably like a lot of the US. But I think the other interesting side of the coin is there are also people who conflict is a hobby, right? Conflict, they're looking to get into conflict.
When we think about edgelords, we call them online.
Yeah, edgelords. Where you are rolling into an environment because it's fun for you to rile folks up. And it's especially fun when you're riling up the people that have been told that it's bad.
It sounds like you're saying that what we've done is we've created a habit of discouraging the good stuff to make more room for the unproductive stuff, which is avoid or come at something with, like, so much certainty that it makes someone
feel uncomfortable. To try to dominate, right?
Domination, yeah.
Yeah. And I would add one more thing to it, right? That, like, not only are we sort of in our private lives taught that conflict should be avoided at all costs, our entertainment is conflict at all costs, right? Reality TV show is based upon conflict. I love to watch shows where conflict is the central plot point. So, and I think we watch political processes and it feels like it's removed from us, right? It feels like it's that entertainment that's out there that, like, I don't have a lot of control of, but we might enjoy watching.
Do you think that this is stuff we should be teaching, like, in our schools? Like, I think about when I took home ec and I learned to write a check, and I'm like, man, I wish I was learning this instead.
I totally believe that that's true. And in fact, I have so many students that finish taking my conflict class and they're like, why wasn't this offered in fifth grade? Why wasn't this offered in seventh grade? Hmm. And I know that our school systems, you know, are overburdened right now and have so many things to teach. But I think the skill set that comes from basic conflict management is like so powerful. And there's a saying in academia that you study the thing you're not great at. And until I went to graduate school and started studying conflict studies, I would just think, oh, I did so much damage to that relationship with that person that I care about, or I'm really upset about this, but I don't know how to take a step, and I'm really scared of losing that. And, you know, I'm not perfect now. I still screw up all of the time, but I at least have a framework that I can operate from so that when I'm upset, let's go back to the beginning example I gave with the friend who's late to show up for events. Instead of me like totally losing my cool and being like, you are such a jerk and you never show up on time and why are you self-centered, which is probably not going to be a great way to like open a dialogue for productive conflict. But what if I waited till the lateness was over and then reached out outside of that situation and said, friend, I care about you so much and our relationship brings me so much joy in my life. And I don't feel like my relationship needs are being met when you're late pretty consistently. I sort of wonder if it means that you don't value my time. I don't know if that's true. That's just a conclusion that I'm making. Could we figure out a way that this doesn't happen anymore because you're so important to me? The reaction that you're going to get is totally different.
You mentioned different conflict styles. And of course, we all have a different approach to conflict. And I think we can't expect that, you know, through a series of YouTube videos, we're all going to just like get on the same page. But do you have some pro tips for us in how we can kind of recognize what's happening in a moment of disagreement when we start to feel that chest tightening and see ourselves out, if only for our own sake, even if we fundamentally are really, really angry with the person we're in conflict with or don't necessarily want to befriend them or see them as a friend?
I think the first thing is to remember that we have a choice in every sort of utterance that we make. Every time we begin a communicative process, anytime we start a conversation with someone, we have a choice on if we want to escalate, keep it sort of neutral, or de-escalate. And so just thinking like, I have a chance right now to decide how I'm going to respond to this. So you could read a tweet that like upsets you, right? Or that like you find provocative. You have the chance to think, okay, could I write a bombastic tweet that will like maybe get me a lot of likes and, you know, make some people mad or make some other people happy? You could do that, but it doesn't open a conversation with curiosity. And it's going to escalate, right? So then we're further away from making a good policy discussion. I would also say that you want to think about your physiological needs. So we live in these human bodies, right? And I know for me, when I'm stressed out, I really sort of like to start conflicts, right? And it might not be about the thing I'm stressed out about, but do you have something else in your life that you're actually feeling anxiety about? But this is an easier thing to fight about. Have you eaten recently, right? The term hangry has become popular in the last few years, but it's very true, right? I often think, would a sandwich solve this situation? Would a nap solve this situation? I know that we have this advice of never go to bed angry, and I would disagree with that, right? I would tell that person that you care about, I'm really upset right now, and I want you to know that I care about you, but I think I'm going to have a clearer head in the morning. So, you know, I'm going to get a good night's sleep, and then I'm going to eat a breakfast sandwich. And then I'm going to talk to you about this situation. And then you mentioned conflict styles. I think we sort of are comfortable with one or two. The styles are avoidant, right? So maybe you just avoid conflict altogether. Accommodating, where you just often let the other person win or get their way. Dominating, where you have to be the winner. It's always got to be my way. You can compromise where you would get a little and I would get a little of what I want. And then you would also not get a little and I would also not get a little of what I want. And then collaborative, which is a little harder, where you're figuring out what is actually the issue at hand And how can I work in conjunction with this other person to get a solution? It's a little harder because it takes a little longer and it takes us being a little more vulnerable about like, what am I really upset about here? What do I really want? Yeah. But if you can be familiar with those five strategies and you can just Google online and take some, you know, conflict style quizzes to see which are your dominant. But if you are able to have all five of those at your disposal and be able to use all five of those in the situation that's most appropriate, I think that's great. Instead of always being dominant or always being avoidant. So those would be some basics I would start with.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Dr. Maria Blevins, professor at Utah Valley University, thank you so much for sharing your expertise.
Thank you. This was a blast to talk about. And go out there and get in some productive conflicts.
That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Thanks for listening. And thank you to our founding CityCast Salt Lake members. You are awesome. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city.